Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is Cues of the Force. The Q stands for questions. All the other words in the title are just the words they are. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsuck, and I love that at one point we said Cues, and we're sticking by it. No need for
it
questions.
It made sense when it was Q's. News and Cues, but now
yes.
I don't know. Yeah, we're just saving space in the tweets. That's what we're doing here.
Nah, I love it. I love it. That's how radio catchphrases and titles happen. Totally by accident.
Right? It's like when people call pizza za. It's just fun, right? Or maybe annoying, depending on who you are.
I have a friend who stands by that, and obviously I get it. I get it. I get where it comes from. It doesn't click with me.
Are you okay with mac and cheese, or do you feel it should be macaroni and cheese?
Macaroni and cheese is like... No, that's like someone sent you a formal letter and you asked for a text. it's mac and cheese.
Please use both of my middle names when addressing me, says macaroni and cheese. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
My mom texts me, dear son, I reach out to you at this time via our telephonic device. Mom, just text.
P.S. Yeah. Anyway, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Sadly, not mac and cheese, but maybe someday. We're happy to have Audible, though. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are continuing to recommend Shadow of the Sith by Adam Christopher. It is a great and, dare I say, important Star Wars book. So if you would like to give it a listen, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for a free audiobook. All right, Ken, are you ready for some questions?
Let's do it. Let's get to them cues.
Some questions or some cues. First up, we have two from Twitter. As always, we're going to Daniel Lewis. Daniel says, is Padme a droid thief? It's always appeared to me that Padme takes C-3PO from the Lars homestead in episode 2 and replaces him in gold to avoid future detection. Did the Lars family report Padme for Grand Theft Automaton, and did they demand compensation for losing a farmhand? This is a fun question, I think, very much stated in a fun way, about intergalactic law and droid ownership. I think 3PO would enjoy answering this question, getting into the details and the protocol. And what is proper? So, Ken, where do you go with this? Have you ever been struggled with this 3PO ownership issue?
No. And this is a great question from Daniel. Yeah, it's really strong in its accusations, but with great fun here. But I think maybe I had so much reverence for Padme, like as if she was a real person, that I just would not dare think of this of her. But I do like it. And I think it's one of those things that I love, those little details of Star Wars that can... be conversation starters for decades, or someone just brings it up, or occasionally you get like a weird kind of sort of answer to it. And I think there was some of that stuff to me in the Padme novels by E.K. Johnston that I just hadn't thought, oh yeah, by Attack of the Clones, how, like R2 and 3, you're like, yeah, how does that switch happen? Like, all that stuff. And so, especially by Revenge of the Sith. So I haven't spent a lot of time on it, but I like thinking about it here today.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think this is a really fun question. I think it is something that people have debated about, like 3PO just getting on that ship. Was he stolen? But my take is that this is not Padme's legal issue. I think in my head canon in analysis, this is a question of 3PO's agency. Because rewatching the clip, he comes and he interrupts Shmi's service.
Yes.
To let them know that R2 is carrying this message from Obi-Wan Kenobi. And then 3PO appears to come onto the ship of his own volition. Mm-hmm. And Big appears. Maybe Anakin said, come here. But the key thing to me is when Padme decides to leave and says, hey, the Jedi Council told you to protect me, Anakin, and I'm going to rescue Obi-Wan. They share their smile. 3PO has no objection. And one of 3PO's favorite things to do in life is to object to things, right? So if 3PO thought in any way that it wasn't proper for him to go along with his maker and former master, Anakin, I think 3PO would have objected. To me, this is about 3PO feeling like he's the maker. He is my sort of, he's the one I owe my service to. He's the one I want to be with. Or 3PO really has it of like, well, he built me for Shmi. Sadly, Shmi has passed on, but her son is here and I feel I passed to him, not to the Lars. So I think about it that way. And then we get into what you were talking about of, once 3PO has made the choice, in my conjecture, to go with Anakin, the idea that Anakin and Padme exchange 3PO and R2 is wedding gifts, that is in the Revenge of the Sith novelization, that's in the Clone Wars micro-series by Gennady Tartakovsky, and now it is in modern canon with the Queen's Hope novel from E.K. Johnston. So I feel like there's a beauty to it that multiple levels and layers of canon have always been interested in. You know, so I think that's a vital part of Daniel's question, right? Because if you aren't just thinking of it as like, Padme's just like, everybody who's on the ship is leaving now. I don't care.
You're gone.
And in fact, this droid's mine now. You know, yeah. I totally get where that's coming from. But we do have the actual, like, in canon, Anakin feels that that 3PO is his droid, and he gifts him to Padme.
I do like, to Daniel's opening question of, is Padme a droid thief? And she just says, I will make it legal.
I will make him gold. No one will ever find him.
Great stuff. I'm going to actually kind of yes and yours. I'm going to adjust my answer a little bit here. I love this 3PO kind of agency kind of thought here. I also love, you've got some real Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, Succession kind of talk about, you know, kind of almost like who's 3PO's heir.
Yeah.
So I follow that. I think this was about to happen. You know, 3PO was all ready to go. And of course, who would stand between that between 3PO and this path forward? It would be Owen. It would be Owen. And, you know, I can understand it. Again, a little slight justice for Owen. I get it. But I think it was Beru. I was going to say offer, but I like what you're saying, Joseph, about the decision 3PO would make to be part of this here. So I think Beru supported that. And Owen did not like that. And he would say, I'm going to need to get another protocol droid, which Beru said, we'll just call Tika, Owen. We'll just get another one. It's okay. And I think they agreed to it. However, there was some level of kind of, I think Padme, out of the depths of her soul and her being full of so much understanding and just empathy for so many people in the galaxy, she understood there was some question of compensation. So I don't know, perhaps there was a royal credit card, a line of credit was open so that Owen could then acquire another protocol droid from Tika or any other source of droids there in Tatooine and in the greater Tatooine area there. I know Tatooine's not a planet, not a city. so that's where I'm going with on my answer. I think taking yours and running with it.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. Maybe Padme asked Sabe to get the Lars homestead, a new protocol droid. The way I imagine it is, I don't feel like there's a conversation of we're leaving. I feel like they get on the ship to, you know, rebroadcast to look at the message, or maybe they look at the message long enough to say, hey, please rebroadcast this. And they go to the ship and 3PO comes along and then they leave. So I think Owen's turning around and just going like, hey, they took my droid. And much like you, Brew has to step in. It's like, Owen, that droid belonged to Shmi. That's the last that young man has of his mother. Yeah. We can get another one. Get a grip, Owen. Because I don't think Owen and 3PO were best buds.
No.
And I really, really like the idea of a special edition of A New Hope when Obi-Wan is talking to Luke about, you know, passing on the lightsaber and saying, your uncle didn't want you to have it. He's afraid you'd follow old Obi-Wan on some damned idealistic crusade and take a droid with.
Yes. Which also, by the way, this makes me think of, you know, another fun Star Wars question is, you come to New Hope now and Owen's like, has no memory of C-3PO.
Right.
I understand that. I understand why people can point to that, but it's a fun thing to me.
Yeah.
But I submit this for evidence. I was at Comic-Con last weekend, ran into a coworker at the bar. We chatted for a while, caught each other up on life. I'd only worked with him 3 years prior, and I went back to the group and I went to my friend, Steph, and I went, hey, what was that person's name? They told me. I was like, thank you. I worked with them for 2 years, only a year and a half ago. Can't remember their names.
Yeah.
So I forgive Owen.
I don't think Owen is bosom buddies with his droids. And I think they spend a lot of time way out in the sandy fields. And I think he does not really get on a first name basis. I think he's had a lot of protocol droids.
Yeah.
And I think he would definitely be like, yeah, wait, what? What was his name? Yeah. I love all these imagined Owen and Beru conversations. Maybe that's in A New Hope too. Of like, you know, he used to own that droid, right? I'm like, what?
Well, especially now he's like, I need a new protocol droid. She's like, we're enough, Owen. We're enough. You, me, we're enough.
We're enough. We can get that moisture out of the sky. Any final thoughts on this great question?
No, I love it. Great stuff, Daniel.
Very, very fun. The more that we can think about Owen grumping in Beru, getting him to get a grip and face reality, the happier we will be. Moving on to our next Twitter cue from Ray Hernandez. Ray says, "Hi, just watched Spaceballs for the first time and loved it, even if it's very of its time. What's your favorite unofficial Star Wars comedies? Mine is Mark Hamill's appearance on The Simpsons, Luke, be a Jedi tonight. Do it for Chewie and the Ewoks and all the other puppets. I'm not singing the song. It's been a while since I've heard it. I know the actual song, Luck Be a Lady Tonight. As a fan of Frank Sinatra, very familiar with that song. Anyway, Ken, where do you go with this? How do you feel about Spaceballs? How long has it been since you've seen it? What is your Spaceballs journey?
Are you ready for a hot take? I never really loved Spaceballs.
You know, I guess this is just our episode to be grumpy together. Because I'm in the, we'll talk about it in more detail, but I'm in the same boat. As always, massive Force Center caveat. Go to your joy. If you love Spaceballs, that's wonderful. I got a history with Spaceballs, but I want to hear yours.
I actually love Mel Brooks and love his place in comedy history. I'm obviously a big fan of comedy history. There's this great book by Cliff Nesterhoff, The Comedians. It begins with some Mel Brooks stuff in it, and his history runs deep. So absolutely love Mel Brooks as a concept and as a creator. And I think he's a little more multifaceted than people would realize. Mm-hmm. I understand the importance of things like Blazing Saddles, all those kind of things. And yes, a lot of you could say, hey, of their time. I think there's some importance to what he was doing with that movie, but also I like Robin to Mentatite. Anyway, so I'm going to turn this to Mel Brooks Center. I did see it in the theater and I did like it. And I was a kid laughing along with all this stuff. And then one time in the early 90s, a friend of mine, Joel, a big Star Wars fan, we joined the Columbia House VHS club, you know, 10 VHSs for 10 cents, whatever it was. And he's like, I'm going to get Spaceballs. So I was like, oh my God, I haven't seen that in so long. And we sat there and watched it. And it wasn't just that the jokes didn't hit it or that times had changed or we grew up. I just was like, I don't know, man. I don't like it. And I just really haven't engaged with it since. I get the cultural impact. I get the references. I like all the performers in it. Big fan of Rick Moranis. I don't know, man. I don't know. The jokes hit me like putty on a wall and they slowly slide down and never take hold.
I am due a rewatching of Spaceballs because I saw it once in the theater and at whatever very young age that was, it made me grumpy. Same thing with you. Huge fan of Mel Brooks. A lot of his films are extremely important. The speaking he's done publicly about the nature of comedy and its importance. Great. I thank Mel Brooks for David Lynch's career. Mel Brooks shadow produced The Elephant Man. It wasn't super public at the time because everybody would think that The Elephant Man was going to be a big, wild Mel Brooks comedy. But great, great stories to be had from David Lynch about how somebody suggested him to Mel Brooks. And David Lynch had only made his own independent film, Eraserhead, which is a wild thing. And Mel Brooks went to see it at a midnight screening. And David Lynch tells this great story of pacing outside going like, I'm just waiting 2 hours for this man, this very, very famous man to come out of the theater and tell me I don't have a job. Of course, he's not going to hire me. This is bonkers. And Mel Brooks comes out and with his hand stretched wide and says, you're a madman. I love you. I'm going to give you this great opportunity. So, none of this is Mel Brooks bashing. I think the reaction that I had when I was a kid is I love Star Wars, and I got that some parts of it were like silly or fun, or there were jokes. And I was like a young kid in particular. I liked Yoda because I liked his silly parts as well as his wise parts. But I think it just felt like the scene in the theater that it was just making fun of a thing I liked. And I think maybe as like a kid who grew up kind of stereotypical nerdy and scrawny back in the 80s and got teased and bullied, and other friends did too, of just like, I do not need to see my Star Wars be teased and bullied. Just not into it. Just like, I get it. Like, I remember laughing at the combing the desert joke with the literal comb. But I think, and I've seen clips since, and I've seen people see how much they love it. And I'm sure if I watched it, I would enjoy parts of it. but I feel like, and again, this is coming from somebody who hasn't seen it in years. I feel like my reaction might be that it is poking fun and satirizing the kind of surface level of Star Wars and not getting into kind of the underneath of what is Star Wars really about? What's it really saying? And what's, you know, what are the cultural implications? I mean, I think that's what makes some of Mel Brooks' other films powerful, is they aren't just parodies of the surface.
Yeah.
They're parodies of, like, well, what does years of Frankenstein pop culture mean to our culture? You know, the same thing with Westerns, right? Like, there's depth there as well as the, let's just have fun with the sort of stereotypes. I'm fully caveating. I haven't seen it in years, and maybe I will watch it and go, hey, I was totally wrong. But I think that might be what I'm responding to.
Yes, yes. This is poor Ray's like, I guess I just want to ask a question about Spaceballs.
Right. Sorry.
These two comics are here with comic theory. But I think some of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about here, even as some of my other answers to things I do love, have a spirit of celebration. And I just don't go, we always joke. I don't like puns. I don't like wordplay. And I just think those play on the surface, and I'm always interested in it. I love, like, 40% of my stand-up act is poop jokes. Like, I'm not sitting here, like, on some artistic edge here. Mm-hmm. But I also think comedy should be communicating, and Mel Brooks has communicated so many wonderful things in his career. I just don't think a lot of it hit with Spaceballs for me. Maybe we both revisit it for Ray and for center audience, because I'm sure we're going to get some folks who either agree or some folks are going to be like, you're two old cranky nutballs, and this is a fun movie, and just laugh. I do just like to laugh. I watched a man on a TikTok video that I saw via Twitter. Like, it's so weird. You see TikTok anywhere but TikTok these days. I saw a man barf and slip on his own barf, and I died laughing for 10 minutes until Grace had to pull me away from the phone. Like, I like silly stuff. But
yeah,
you know what I mean? This one didn't hit.
Yeah, and I
think I even then in 87 or whatever, I was defensive over Star Wars. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely where it started as a kid. And now having, like, I've had a literal physical list that my wife and I have made of movies we need to rewatch or one of it hasn't seen. Spaceballs has been on the list forever, and then I've watched some clips, and I am feeling like, I'm not sure. But I am going to rewatch it one of these days and review my opinions. But as always, we're thrilled for people to like it, because if nothing else, it's taking the kind of the images and the characters of Star Wars and having fun with them. And there's nothing wrong with that. Lucas always encouraged that. That in itself is let's just goof on Star Wars, even if it's right on the surface, is still fun. So I'm really glad that people get to enjoy this film. So now that we've gone through our own childhoods in relationship to comic theory, maybe we should answer the question.
I thought these guys were comics. It's like, we're not class clowns, man. Class clowns are, I do not connect with class clowns. I never was a class clown. I was in the back of the room going, why did I say that thing funny? And everyone in class laughed. Why did that make them laugh? That's what my life was.
I like trying to make jokes in class. I didn't like it when, for no reason, someone pushed me and other people thought that was funny. That wasn't fun for me.
It wasn't funny.
A little bit of a difference.
Anyway.
And thanks for the counseling, everyone. Now we're going to answer the actual question. What are the Star Wars comedies or parodies that really speak to you?
And I totally admit this long diatribe I just went on, but some of these might, I don't know, make me seem like I'm, I don't know. I'm just going to answer. How about that? No caveats. I'm going to answer. and I have done a Star Wars ranked by myself, a solo Star Wars ranked on this. I have always loved Hardware Wars. Hardware Wars came out in 78-ish, I think. It is loved by George Lucas. It was like the first parody. It is totally, you know, made on the fly. Interesting story behind it there. And it's got some surface level stuff. I mean, the Death Star is like a tennis ball or a basketball. Excuse me. there's a waffle maker. It's not this deep philosophical thing. But it also is very representative of just that era when Star Wars was everywhere and it was changing the world. And I think it's a little bit more timely of a parody than 10 years later with Spaceballs coming along a little bit after the fact for me. This was during it. It was of its time. And I just, and it's its own kind of shared. And by the way, Spaceballs has this too. Go Ludicrous Speed or any other references. We ain't found bleep. Those can connect you. But I found in my era coming up, especially late 80s, junior high, this was a movie that was almost in the back of your mind that you didn't remember existed or you thought it was a dream. You just see an early VHS or somehow I saw mine at like a camp and it was also attached to like a Godzilla meets Bambi parody and another like a Close Encounters of Third Kind parody, which my mom and dad knew one of the actors in that. And somehow so that's how I saw it. We all sat down and watched it. And like I almost thought I dreamed Hardware Wars. And come later on in junior high, early high school, I meet and my friend Joel, I'd mentioned the same one with Spaceballs. I mentioned Augie Bendoggy, which was the Obi-Wan Kenobi character. And he was like, whoa, Hardware Wars. It's like Hardware Wars. And so we connected over this kind of shared, wait, did we dream this up? No, it was real. And that's why I have a lot of love for that.
Yeah, that's great. I saw Hardware Wars. We used to go to the public library in Portland, Oregon, when we briefly lived there on, I think, Saturday for like kind of like adventure serial day. And they would show Hardware Wars as a trailer and then play King Kong. I feel like I saw King Kong like 37 times when I was very young, that original, but they played it. And you're right. It was in the era. And it was like, you're so anxious to see anything related to Star Wars and it's silly and fun and weird. I think that might be part of it with Spaceballs. Spaceballs is 87, right?
Yeah.
From a kid's perspective, you know, Star Wars is done in 83. Toys are still coming out in 84. But then that the cartoons briefly with droids and Ewoks, and that's about it. From a kid's perspective, 83, 84 to 87 is 1,000 years.
Lifetime. A lifetime.
I think that was a part of it for me as a kid, too, of like, Star Wars is already dead. Why are you still kicking it?
Stay down. Star Wars, stay down.
Yeah. So that said, I agree with Ray's pick. I love that episode of The Simpsons. I think that's some great parody because it is getting into Mark Hamill's career and Mark Hamill's willingness to kind of play with, you know, people expecting Star Wars from him. And this sort of like jamming it in awkwardly. into other elements of pop culture. So that seems like that's some really great, good satire to me. On the sillier side, I think I will always probably love the very most Luke Skywalker and Mark Hamill's appearance on The Muppet Show.
Oh, it's on my list too, man.
Right. It's just, I've rewatched that actual just episode of Muppet Show a couple times in the last few years. And it's fun. It's playful. It is the Bespin outfit in its full glory. That is great. I think what I like about it is that Luke Skywalker is kind of trying to play it like it's real, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The whole episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And Mark Hamill, the whole Mark Hamill thing is playing it as it is, you know, absolutely. I love vaudeville. Let's go for it. Let's do a song and dance. And that contrast is really funny to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I put that down as well. Luke Skywalker and the Droids on the Muppet Show. They also did the Sesame Street, I believe, right? Earlier around the same time. And this was in the lead up to Empire. So it was kind of look at this. Luke's got a new outfit and a blaster. He's got Han's blaster. It was kind of fun. And yeah, I grew up with the Muppet Show. It's something that's very key to my kind of entertainment comedy upbringing and perhaps yours as well, because it's so much of our generation.
Absolutely. For years, my brother and I did a late night variety show that the Muppets was a part of the DNA of it. It was a big influence if you grew up with it.
Yeah, I do my silly little radio podcast parody show Saturday Night Epsuck, and it was my pal John Mariano pointed out, he goes, you know, you're a lot of the Muppet shows in this. And I was like, you know what? I hadn't even really thought about that.
That's
makes
awesome.
A lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And so that's a lot of fun. And this one, there's a celebration of it. The crossover Luke Skywalker, the droids and pigs in space is a dream crossover. Talk about multiverses. There's one I want. So there's that one. And then also it's so funny, as a kid, I didn't connect it, you know, I'm watching this in that time period. You know, I'm not connecting Yoda to Henson and Oz and all that stuff, you know. It's so the DNA is all over both those appearances there, Yoda and Empire, and of course Luke and the droids on the Muppet Show, where that all kind of began. I love that connection.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that was one of probably the first behind the scenes details that blew my mind, when somebody's like, you know, Grover, you like Grover? Like, I'm gonna blow your mind with some Star Wars information. Yeah. Anything else on your list of favorite Star Wars comedies?
Not necessarily intentional, but it makes a lot of sense. Staying in the Muppet world. This one's big. It's big for my pal, Mark Ellis, our friend, Mark. The Muppet Babies Star Wars episodes and the Indiana Jones ones. Big. And I had no idea at the time, you know, concept of reruns or syndication. Just like I would tune in every Saturday morning hoping that this would be either the Star Wars episodes or another one.
Yeah.
And it just was the best. And it just, again, talk about daydreaming and celebrating and getting inside the imagination that Star Wars kind of helps stoke in all of us. Absolutely have just a great affinity for the Muppet Baby Star Wars parodies.
Yeah, no, I rewatched those on YouTube a while back too, because I remember seeing those. And yeah, so little Star Wars around that time. It's just like, what? Anything?
Yeah.
So yeah. Final one for me isn't really a Star Wars parody. It's just a thing that I have come to really appreciate. Carrie Fisher has a very short role in the horror film Scream 3. Not necessarily my favorite Scream movie, but Carrie Fisher's short role is just, it's just so classically Carrie Fisher, very interested in the realities of Hollywood and poking fun at them. And just a great bit with Carrie Fisher.
Love that.
All right. Any other thoughts before we take a quick break?
No, other. I just feel the need to apologize again to Spaceball fans. I understand.
Me too. I'm going to rewatch it, and I hope that I have a much better experience than when I was a grumpy child in 1987. And with that, we're going to take a quick break.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
And we are back to continue our Spaceballs. No, we're going to take more questions from listeners to from our patrons on Patreon. We are going to get a little bit more serious, a little bit more thoughtful as we drift from Spaceballs back to Star Wars. This comes to us from our patron, Brian Babcock. Brian says, hello there. After soaking up the Kenobi series multiple times, I am left, much like Joseph and Gen stated in their finale discussion, that this series went to painstaking effort to connect to A New Hope and helped add a new dynamic to the original film. I 100% agree and feel everything lines up very well. I also started to think about how the Kenobi series even enhances aspects of the sequel trilogy. Mainly, it explains why Leia would want to name her son Ben. A lot of people questioned this choice when The Force Awakens came out. Now we have a fantastic answer to it. It also got me thinking of Ben's return to the light in The Rise of Skywalker, which brings me to my question. I've always thought that the image of Han in the conversation they have simply played out as a thought in Ben's head. But what if Ben force projected the image of Han in front of him in order to actually speak to him, feel the actual touch on the cheek, be able to actually look his father in the eyes to let him know how sorry he was for what he did. I just love all the content we're getting and how even if there was no more Star Wars to be made, the stuff we have is a gift that keeps on giving when you can discover or reinterpret scenes we've seen 100 times. Thanks for reading, and may the Force be with you. May the Force be with you, Brian. Thanks for this thoughtful and interesting question. Ken, any thoughts as we're getting a little farther away from Kenobi about how it's resonating out to all the other storytelling?
Yeah, I continue to be really jazzed about that. Just simple jazz, my friends. I just love Kenobi's. I keep saying it's brought new energy to A New Hope and even Jedi and Empire and a lot of other properties for me. I just really connect with a lot of that stuff. Yeah, I know there's some discourse around that too, but it's like water off a duck on me. I am just so moved by what that show does and how it connects to other stories and how it has fun. I think there's just a lot of fun in it. And it isn't just going, oh, this is a weird little, let's fix this thing here. It's just like, hey, we have this in the original stories, the original movies that inspired generation after generation. I should say Star Wars. How can we connect to that in a exciting, fulfilling way? And I think it continues to do that for me. And just absolutely love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it did the work to, you know, make sure that some of the concerns that some fans had about does this line up, to kind of address those. And I know for some fans it didn't work, and that's fine. But I think it did make some efforts to do that. But I feel like it was much more concerned with, you know, the emotional canon, as you have coined it, Ken, and the thematic ideas. And I think it does make everything so much richer with Leia naming her son Ben. I kind of always like the explanation that, well, Ben Kenobi is the one who brought all of them together in A New Hope. And it was a little bit of a tribute to that. But I like this additional information. And I've always been intrigued by it because multiple Star Wars authors have mentioned in interviews and social media that they had something they're going to put in various novels about this, about the whole, why is Han and Leia's son named Ben? And we're asked to hold off. And, you know, I think Ben Kenobi would be happy that patience paid off. And now it is really interesting to play with these, with those connections, not just Leia's connection to Obi-Wan, but Ben in the power of that name, that conversation with Han, maybe that conversation with Luke, certainly the conversation with Ben Solo. There is a brief mention in the Rise of Kylo Ren comic book where Kylo, or Ben at that time, Ben Solo acknowledges he's named after this great Jedi he's never even met. So there is a little bit of that, like, it's a source of frustration and manipulation from Snoke's perspective of Ben Solo, But once Ben Solo becomes one with the Force, that's very joyful to think of him connecting with his namesake, you know, connecting with Obi-Wan within the Force. And that connection is really heartwarming to me.
Yeah, I love that there. Yeah, and even just for years following 2015 Force Awakens, I just kind of did like the, hey, you know, I remember even kind of discussing, wondering if, I don't know, Leia probably didn't even meet Kenobi. You know, there was that kind of thought, which I understand where that comes from. Now we have a different version of that. But just this idea of like, yeah, you know, we're together because of him. He doesn't pick me in that cantina. I don't take that job. We don't, none of this happens, right? None of this happens. So I kind of got on that level. And I love the use. I think it's great to point out that Reza Kylo Ren comic, which is great and rewarding in a lot of ways for this kind of information, of just another thing that could be held over Ben Solo, an identity that you're supposed to live up to, that you're connected to, that you don't really even want to, or the pressure of it could be manipulated to push down on you. That's a good spot.
Another piece of the past plastered onto his identity, which is a totally understandable anxiety that then gets manipulated by Snoke. But then idea that at some point in his life, even in his life within the Force, that Ben Solo could like understand and feel what we, the audience, just got to feel watching, you know, Ben Kenobi be the first person who is, you know, who Leia made this connection with, who showed her the larger galaxy, who she helped, you know, get better. All those things, you know. The idea that Ben Solo could finally understand those moments is really powerful to me. And it's still a fun discussion just with the Force Awakens of, we hear he's Kylo, then we get the confirmation that, yep, he is Han and Leia's son, and then we get that incredibly dramatic moment where Han yells out, and there's like, okay, if he yelled Bail, it might have made some sense to Star Wars fans, but to other people, would be like, why is he telling him to leave? You know? Or if it was just a space name, Chadron, like, it wouldn't have had any resonance, right? So it always worked to me because it had resonance, because, like, we don't know the full story, but we know that's a name with weight.
Yes.
And so it was always a good choice, and it always worked because the other options aren't as resonant. And now I'm so happy that moment that was resonant now has fully paid off.
I mean, missed opportunity by not taking Chadron, but, you know, we can come back to that character. No, I absolutely. And I forget, too, you know, time moves on so quickly. That was the moment. Yeah, that was a big moment. Him yelling that had that kind of like, oh, okay. Yeah, gotcha. We can analyze it later. But that was an impactful moment for me personally in the theater. So love that. That's a great bit.
Yeah, I mean, he could have yelled son, right? But us knowing his name contributed to this classic story of, is he Kylo, is he Ben, you know? And and obviously extremely fundamental to the way Rey talked to him and related to him and spoke to him, you know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay, so let's get into then Brian's great question about Ben Solo's connection, realization of Han. How are you feeling about it these days? Do you like it as what it's, I think, meant to be presented in the film as just a memory? Or do you like the idea that it could be something more from some perspective?
I'm open to that kind of interpretation. I think I take it as it's presented, but we'll get into a little bit more of the details there. And you know, I just absolutely love this scene, right? I just absolutely love this scene, man. And I'll start here and answering it here with Brian. I really agree with Brian on there's this great value of discovery or rediscovery, just kind of both within the saga when you get to look at beats as they connect other parts of the story differently as more stories roll out, and just ourselves, like, what do you see in that scene in 2019? What are you seeing it now? And what's changed, what's grown. I think reinterpreting scenes over the course of our fandoms has great value, which is one of the things we love doing here. So again, this is a scene that I think this might've been the scene that you tapped me on the shoulder because you heard me crying. I can't remember. I think this is a memory, and that the words and wisdom that are kind of coming out of Han are from Ben's own conflicted heart and mind. You know, this is perhaps something that he was saying to himself for years, those conversations he's having that we all have in our car when we're driving to an event we don't want to go to. Go home, stay, go home, go with us. I think that's where a lot of the information came from me, that these are just simply actions he wished he had taken, that he's relived this conversation ever since that moment. And that's part of the war going on between them, the conflict that Rey's connecting with. And to me, the scene kind of lives in a warm, squishy middle between reality and imagination. And that's why it connects so deeply. Cause I was rewatching it a couple times this morning, and there's almost like no real answer to how, you know, is it just an artistic scene, an interpretation of what's going on in Ben's head? With Star Wars, you could say there's a little force touch going on, and maybe there was, it was a little bit more. And I, like I said, I would be open to following that path of discovery, like Brian's talking about here. I don't necessarily think it's Kenobi. I don't, it doesn't make a lot of sense for maybe even Han to be there. I don't know. But I'd love that this, there is no immediate, this is how it happened. We just have the why. And it just, you and I have talked so many times, and we'll talk again, just how this made Han's last act just full of this galaxy saving compassion. And to me, that means it haunted Kylo and called to Ben the entire time. And this scene reflects that to me. And I do believe it's a very vibrant memory.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it definitely one of my favorite scenes. I think just an absolutely wonderful payoff of the beautiful cheek touch in The Force Awakens. I feel like there is an effort in the film, you know, Han's not blue and shimmering. And I think there's an awareness that there's going to be those kind of questions of what is this, which is why I think we have that conflicted line from Ben, who says, you're just a memory. And then I think within that, I think there's lots of open interpretation of like, but how is Ben slash Kylo experiencing this memory? Is this truly he's just having a conversation with himself? Is this almost like a level of force meditation so that for himself, Ben isn't actually calling Han's spirit there from the nether realm? It is a memory, but Ben Kylo is literally seeing it and literally feeling it because it's a level of meditation within the force. You know, does he, you know, anything is possible through the force? Does he truly flash back in time so he feels the heat on his cheek, the warmth, you know, all that stuff? I agree with you, it's open for interpretation. The key thing to me, the thing that I think is really, really powerful about the scene is I do really love that it is just a memory. I think the no one's ever really gone line and idea in Star Wars, it's important to me that that isn't just about Force spirits. That isn't just about Jedi who literally, you know, can appear before some people and still commune with them, still speak with them. I think that it's about this great real life truth that we carry the people we knew and loved with us. No one's ever really gone if we remember them, if we try to imagine that they are still speaking to us, still watching over us, still helping us. And I think, so I think that's just kind of beautiful in general of like, no one's ever really gone isn't just about somebody coming back from the dark side or a Jedi learning to become one with the Force and retain their consciousness. It's that anybody who ever loses someone, the memories of that person isn't really gone. And then I think for me, just with this scene with Kylo Ben, I really like the idea that you're talking about as well, Ken, that whatever this is, however it manifests, what's happening is Kylo slash Ben is just finally being honest with himself. Deep down, he always knew his father loved him, even when he was angry and doubted it and pushed it away and used it as an excuse, right?
Yeah.
Deep down, he is blown away by, after doing the worst thing imaginable, after putting that blade through his father's chest, his father still put that hand on his cheek and just basically said, there's nothing you could ever do to make me stop loving you. I think he just pushed that away. And this scene is him letting himself feel the truth. And the truth that his gruff, distant, not perfect father loved the absolute hell out of him.
Yeah.
Gives him the strength he needs, you know? And then on top of it all, the fact that it is a replay of the bridge scene in some ways of what if I had responded when he reached out, you know?
Yeah.
And it's also powerful that, you know, there's great stuff early on in Rise of Skywalker where Rey and Kylo have one another's numbers and they know what they're haunted by.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
You know, and Kylo tells Rey, like, you can't let go of, you know, the abandonment, you know, that you feel from whatever happened to your parents. And Rey is saying, like, well, you're haunted by what you did to your father, right? So it is also, I think, him facing the worst thing he did in his mind and finding not only strength and forgiveness, but a way forward through that memory.
Yeah, and this stuff just happened with his mother, right? Her kind of passing in the fight, and he's feeling that, and this idea, because I love that he's telling the memory of his father, basically, and paraphrasing, but like, you know, I can't go back, and it's just, I think he's been telling himself that and others for so long, including Ray, and I think he keeps replaying that cheek moment for sure in his mind. So anyways, I'm with you on all that, and just... what it means and just this ongoing haunting / hope. I think there was the Ben inside him saw this as hope. You just needed to find the strength to get to it. But that's so hard. And that's part of the challenge.
Yeah. And I think it's one of the many moments in Star Wars and with the Skywalker saga and the Skywalkers in particular, where there are moments where they make a huge galactic difference because they are very powerful. Right. And a lot of different players want something out of the Skywalkers because of their power. But a lot of these big moments that make the biggest difference have nothing to do with power. They're just a small human choice that any of us could make, right?
Yeah.
And that's what this scene is about, is him being brave enough to say, I've been down this path and I told myself I couldn't turn back, but I'm going to be strong enough and brave enough. My father would support me if he was here. He would encourage me. I can do this. I can make the really scary choice of basically, you know, with the lightsaber heaving, like throwing away this horrible addiction to the dark side and moving toward the light.
Yeah. Yeah. Kylo's journey being his own journey. There's Rey and found family and choosing so much of your path forward. And Kylo Ben clearly has big choices to make and does, but I think part of his journey is go back to the first moments to meet him with Lor San Tekka. Like, you can never escape your name. And that's certainly this pressure, right? And we're seeing even with, you know, I'm named by some old wizard Jedi. I don't even want to be named. But that's his particular journey and his particular story. And I'm sure that connects to so many folks. And just to go from that Lor San Tekka moment to that being a burden to being a source of change, inspiration, and love and compassion and something that he never leaves. And Han being that, it works for me. And I know... You know, we connect with what we need to sometimes in Star Wars, but I love that one there too. So powerful stuff.
Yeah. Very, very powerful scene. Thank you, Brian, for the great thoughts and the great question and the great chance to reflect on that scene. Any other thoughts before we move on?
No, other than in Spaceballs 2, when they do this scene.
The Spaceballs Awaken. I look forward to it. Moving on to our final question from our patron, Jay. Jay says, was Dooku's interrogation of Obi-Wan on Geonosis done at the behest of Sidious or of his own volition? I know part of the beauty of that scene is the ambiguity and sowing of mistrust by verbally hiding in plain sight. That said, it always read to me like a gamble by the Count, where his follow-up direction will be based on Kenobi's reaction and answer. Had Obi-Wan genuinely acquiesced, would Dooku actually have used him to take down his master Sidious? And if so, would it be via the light or the dark? Side note, this scene, more than any other in Star Wars, is the one I find myself randomly thinking about. These are some great questions. I know we've talked about it before when we did the breakdown of this scene, but I think this scene always invites looking at in fresh ways. So, Ken, I want to start with the first part of Jay's question about Sidious. Do you think Sidious was aware of, like, hey, and if you capture this Jedi, just confuse him a little bit, frighten him a little bit with some, implication that maybe there's something they don't know about in the Senate?
Ooh, I like what you say there. I like that angle. I almost take it as if it's not specific to, hey, boss, I've got Kenobi, which you could. I just like that's kind of an overall mandate, right? Like when they were hatching this plan 10 years prior or whatever, just like, look, we've got to continue to muddy the waters. I use the phrase weaponizing trust and how we can bend that word and bend what facts might be and just, you know, inflame people's passions and just confuse them. I so often look at this scene, and Jay, we're with you. This is one of our favorite scenes in Star Wars. That's why we did the scene by scene breakdown. I think often just, you know, I live in that, like, I call the scene, you know, when Star Wars asked you, you know, who do you trust?
and playing with that trust, because this is the story of good and evil, and it's so easy to say everything on the dark side is a lie. I think they do, it tends to push towards that, but it certainly starts with this, let's take something you might be feeling and push it down your throat a little bit here. And I think that's always what's going on. And I take it as I look at it as Dooku's little side quest, though, that regardless of what Sidious said, everything Dooku's doing here is him going, I got an opportunity here.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I mean, I think some George Lucas quote could emerge that I've never heard of saying, absolutely, Dooku did that on Sidious's orders. And I would say like, okay, cool, that makes sense, because Sidious is about sowing mistrust.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
But my gut reaction to the scene is that Dooku is really taking the initiative here. And it works fine for Sidious. He's not crossing a line too much. Sidious expects him to poke around at... find an apprentice and that kind of thing, and Sidious will step on it if he thinks it's going too far, which he does with Asajj Ventress in the Clone Wars animated series. But yeah, Sidious wants to have the Jedi looking over their backs. I wrote down the great discussion at the end of Attack of the Clones, where Obi-Wan, Yoda, and Mace are talking, and Obi-Wan's asking if they think it's true what Dooku said, that that this Dark Lord Sidious could be in control of the Senate. And Yoda says, lies, deceit, creating mistrust are his ways now, meaning Dooku. And then Mace immediately says, nevertheless, I feel like we should keep a closer eye on the Senate. And Yoda says, I agree, which is one of my favorite Yoda deliveries.
Yes.
So I think that is really in the film to show us that was the intent and the result of Dooku's comments of give them this half truth that's just enough for them to start chasing every shadow, for them to start doubting every other Jedi, every politician, and just spread the mistrust. So I feel like Dooku didn't succeed at getting Obi-Wan on his side, if that was a hope, but he sure did succeed in spreading mistrust. We see it expressed in lots of ways in the Clone Wars animated series.
Yeah.
So Sidious, so we're both on the same page of maybe Sidious made the command, but do you feel also like it's a little bit more Dooku's play?
I think he thought he had a line to Kenobi through Qui-Gon. And again, you know, weaponizing trust, but like, all right, let me try this. Let me try this angle here. And then, you know, it goes on, the scene plays out as it does. But even if there was some kind of, you know, if Sidious knew Kenobi's here, I still think Kenobi makes, you know what? Good. Let's do it. I think Dooku is like, awesome. That I won't, let's go get him. Like, I still think that's at play.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Sidious would want to know, you know, what Kenobi knows so he can move the chess pieces around, you know, but I think Dooku's actual, attempted manipulation of Kenobi, I think Dooku is just poking around, you know?
Yep. Yep.
I think Dooku is keeping his options open. And I agree with you. I think Dooku's really curious of, like, I've heard great things that he's really, you know, strong and powerful and wise. Does he question the order as much as Qui-Gon did? Does he have any other kind of vulnerability I can expose that I didn't know about? I think the fact that Dooku's path to this dark side appears to kind of start with frustration with the order, that they won't help people, they won't save people, is like, is that a way in to breaking Kenobi? And to answer Jay's question, I think if Kenobi gave him anything to work with in that conversation, which he doesn't, and Dooku's just like, you're a disappointment. I think if Kenobi gave him anything to work with, I think Dooku would have happily followed the traditional path. He would have tried to, you know, feed on whatever little seed of anger or fear that Kenobi has. Even if Kenobi said, like, oh, sure, fine, I'll make a deal with the devil and together we'll get Sidious.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he would have tried to break him. He would have tried to feed on the fear, the anger that Obi-Wan has. Yeah. He would have tortured him. Direct spoilers for the book Dark Disciple, and I think he would have tried to, you know, turn Obi-Wan to the dark side.
Yeah, similar to some stuff happened with Lost Honest. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And, you know, Dooku is described often, I always cite Christopher Lee himself talking about Dooku being so immoral, only concerned with his own his own power. So, you know, he would use whatever methods available to get his way and get more power. But I just can't imagine. You just can't touch the light side anymore. Truly, once you start down the dark path, forever will dominate your destiny. And I just think he wants to poison Kenobi. And you know what's funny? This is something that I can't even remember in our scene by scene if we discussed it too much, or it's just maybe more on my mind now since we've just been focusing on Kenobi a lot over the last few months. I really want to, this is another, put it in the chapter, in the file folder of Kenobi not breaking. It's just such a Kenobi doesn't break moment. And that includes some actual mistrust or some information out there that's confusing your soul. Like he's pretty sure about the Qui-Gon thing. You know, Qui-Gon would never join you, but I think there's sometimes I look at it as a little bit of an ellipsis, a Gen X ellipsis at the end of that sentence. But despite all that, it's another example of Kenobi not breaking.
Yeah. No, he gives him nothing to work with, right?
Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, just to kind of follow it through to its conclusion, I think, if Dooku had discovered that, ooh, there's a way in. Kenobi's kind of giving me this guff, but ooh, I sense this fear, or this weakness, or I'm gonna dive in. But yeah, I think he absolutely would have turned Kenobi and used him against Sidious. I think that's that is the way. But he doesn't, and I think the gambit is, and so if I use this this half truth about Sidious in order to get in there and try to manipulate Kenobi, if he says no, like he did, the worst I have is I've spread some great mistrust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Dooku wins no matter what.
Yep. Dooku wins. That's his goal.
That's the goal. Dooku winning, which he does until he doesn't. Thanks, Jay, for the great question. Those are questions. We have a new Power of the Light Side entry this week. This comes to us from Michael McCarcel. Are you ready, Ken?
I am ready.
Michael says, hello, Force Center friends. I'm going to get a bit literal with this one. I promise this will make sense. The last 2 months or so have been quite the ride for me. I was sadly forced to vacate the place I've been living in since 2018 and had to move back in with one of my parents. However, with this living space development, I won't have to pay rent and will have the opportunity to go back and finish college after a decade out. I'll also be able to quit the dead-end job that has brought me nothing but stress. With all of these sudden developments, I find myself sinking into self-doubt. Can I even do this? Am I capable? Should I even try? It's times like these that I need many of the lessons from Star Wars the most. And as a very simple comfort, I allow myself a moment of calm. I turn off all the lights, stand in front of a mirror, and turn on a lightsaber. That wonderful symbol of hope cutting through the darkness lets me come back from the negativity and calm my mind, if only for a bit. The power of the light side, indeed. You will know when you are calm, at peace, passive. I don't know what the future holds for me, but I have to have hope and do my best. Thank you all, and may the Force be with you. May the Force be with you, Michael. Thank you for sharing this very honest, very literal in a great way, and very relatable Power of the Light Side. Ken, do you have any thoughts or reactions?
Yeah, you look, Michael, we're with you on your journey forward. Trust me, I've been there, currently in some kind of situation of, I gotta look at it as the future is wide open, not that doors have been closed, and it's going to happen again and again and again. There's always going to be seasons of that and seasons of change, and you can only step forward and not hold on too much to the past. And that's always hard to do, but what I love about this more than anything is the description of the lightsaber, this weapon of a Jedi. It's called that. It is that in a lot of ways, but this idea of it being a symbol of hope and the cutting through the darkness, something that's so, I don't know, just was so impactful with the Kenobi series, that wonderful little description of what the Force feels like to Leia. And then in chapter 4, episode 4 of the Kenobi series, where that literally is what happens, where she's captured and in the darkness, the lightsaber emerges. And yes, there it's very much a weapon, but it's also the symbol of hope. And we can take that in Star Wars. And we take that in our toys. And going back to some of our conversations you and I always have about memorabilia. And it is consumerism. It is what can you buy? It is you get dollar signs and stars in your eyes when you walk into a toy store and you got to have it all. Yep, I totally get that. And I have a storage shed of things I might not need as much as I used to, but there's those little things that you have and those little things you take about it. It's what's in your hands. It's what's in your life, what's in front of you. I have no doubt that Michael is being very sincere here, that just the image of a lightsaber in a dark room can work to provide you hope, because we always say here, Force Center friends, I don't think there's a lot of casual Star Wars fans that's come through here. And if you stay, it's because Star Wars grabs you in a special way. And we all understand it. And we're not alone in it. And I love Michael's story here. Michael, all you got to do is step forward.
Yeah, well said, Ken. Yeah, our hearts are with you, Michael. It is very relatable. I have had many times in life where there is a change in circumstance, and it can be an opportunity, but it can also have these moments of fear and concern and all those things. Very relatable. And I really, really relate to the moments where Star Wars can help me cut through all that and get past the noise and the anger and the fear. And just there's a feeling when you can kind of recenter on what you're certain of. Like, that's, I think, that the line that Michael quotes from Yoda, you will know when you are calm, at peace, passive. It's such a wonderful feeling when you can get to that place where you step back far enough and you remember what matters to you. Mm. Like, okay, well, I'm frustrated about this, that, or this, but like at the end of the day, what truly matters to me? And you get that feeling of clarity and peace. And I think that is what's powerful to me about Star Wars. I love so much about the toys and the weird characters and the awesome action scenes and the history and everything. But at the end of the day, it's just these stories capture philosophy that is deep and true and resonant, right? And they're not just from Star Wars. It's just that Star Wars packaged them in a way that allows some of us to wield it and have it to help our lives and to create something that's a lightsaber, right? It's a fantasy weapon. It's a cool space sword, but it's imbued with all these ideas that can kind of cut through the darkness, as Michael says, cut through the noise and just be this concrete symbol of hope, of being centered, of truly being aware of who you are and what is most important to you. And it's one of the main reasons that I just love Star Wars and always will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So thank you very, good very stuff. Much, Michael. Well, thank you, Ken. If you, listener, patron, have a Power of the Light Side that you would like to share, it can be a deep and relatable like Michael's. It can just be, a vest you like that reminds you of Star Wars. Anything positive, celebratory, hopeful, feel free to look for the post on our Patreon for the Power of the Light Side entry and share it. If we get more entries, we will keep sharing them, and we'll let you every few episodes we'll remind you that is an option. Ken, any final thoughts on any of our cues or Power of the Light Side?
I love the cues show. It's always takes us so many parts of the Star Wars galaxy. It's a lot of fun, and how we our perspectives, what we engage with, but also love hearing all of your stories out there. So thanks, Michael, and everyone else who continues to contribute to the Power of the Light Side. Good stuff.
Absolutely. So, Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, we're the Force Center Podcast Feed. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod, Instagram, and YouTube as well. Hey, give us a subscription, press that bell, all those wonderful YouTube things over there on the YouTube channel. Get a live show coming up Friday, July 29th. Do a live Q&A show once a month. More content coming. We have the Lessons from Little Leia essay out there too. Working on, we're both trying to work on some other ones. Man, it's really hard to do everything at once, but stand by. We got some more things coming. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcast available on Acast, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, and more merch available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. You can find me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com. There's other things I'm doing. You know, we are getting close to fantasy fever pitch season here. House of the Dragon, Rings of Power, not to mention Andor, Bad Batch coming. We've got Andor and Bad Batch on Force Center, but I'll be talking about Rings of Power and House of the Dragon on my podcast, Casterly Talk. So head over and check that out. You can link to it from my website. Joseph, what do you got cooking?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can check my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures, past, present, and future. Speaking of future, I'm doing a show at the convention in Minneapolis, Convergence. It is in August. There's information on the shows that I'm doing there and the convention itself on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. So check that out if you're interested. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for 3PO, deciding for himself, maybe, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.